Good evening, everyone. I am Jason Miles, your host here for another episode of This is Revolution Podcast. If you're new to the channel, please like and subscribe. If you're enjoying what you see, make sure you hit the notification bell so you are alerted whenever we go live, as we're constantly adding new episodes and doing cross streams with other channels and adding new programming. As you noticed, I'm here on a Wednesday. We're switching it up again. Once again, I am gentrifying, or I would say retaking over, White Guy Wednesday. We've had a ton of serious shows on the channel: suicide, homelessness, the history, the origins of the right wing. I decided I'd switch it up a bit and do a Pop Life episode. I totally was so excited that I forgot to play the Pop Life music, but I will play it, that outro, when we're done here. Don't worry, if blackpilling discussions on the political climate is what you're looking for, that is coming up just tonight. Let's have some fun. We get to talk to an actress from one of my favorite movies. So get those super chat questions ready, because I know there are a few people that are watching here that also love Better Off Dead. Maybe as much as me, but not more than me. Just remember that. You can love it as much as, just not more than. Also, before we start, for you audio listeners, Apple is offering a subscription service. So if you're enjoying the show and don't want to try to figure out Patreon or have another service that you pay for, you can have access to the Champagne Rooms by just subscribing to This is Revolution Podcast on Apple. Again, if you're following the show on Apple Podcasts, you can have access to all the Champagne Room shenanigans. But if you would like access to all the patron-only Champagne Rooms, past and present, be a part of the live virtual audience for the Pascal Robert-hosted Mau Mau Hour. And of course, join us for movie night. There's only one way: become a patron for as little as $3 a month or $30 for the year. It can all be yours. Now, you've heard me say this on the show before, and if you're a patron, you've probably heard me quote some lines from this movie in the Champagne Room, but the 1985 romantic comedy Better Off Dead is one of my favorite films. I can relate so much with John Cusack's crestfallen protagonist, and I, like many that watched it, hope too that a cool, stylish, attractive, mechanically handy, professional stunt skiing baseball enthusiast would move in across the street, give me confidence, and we'd fall in love over a TV dinner. The woman I'm talking about has been in more movies than just that one, but it was that one that made such an impression on me as a young preteen. Through the 80s, she was, as she writes, "I was an 80s teen babe. The hottie, the innocent, the vixen, the sweetheart, the crush, the seductress, the ingenue, the girl you fell in love with. Audiences rooted for me and booed me, adored me and hated me, wanted to be like me or just wanted me. Whether I played the good girl or the bad girl on screen, I always got the attention and I always got the guy. I was an 80s teen babe." That is from her book, Diane Franklin, The Excellent Adventures of the Last American French Exchange Babe of the 80s. Please welcome Diane Franklin.
That was an amazing intro.
I have to apologize. So usually, like I was saying before, usually I have a studio inside and I have a soundboard with effects and applause and everything. And while I'm having some computer issues and while I wait for the new one to come, I have to do everything. Poor me, I have to do everything out here on this terrace here in Baja, California.
Well, you're amazing, and I'm just happy to be here.
I'm very excited to have you. I was talking to a friend earlier today about this show because I've been so excited. And I said, I don't know how I'm going to tell this woman that she totally ruined relationships for me, because I have been waiting for a French foreign exchange student that knows how to fix my car, teach me how to do something like ski, and then, you know, give me some.
You absolutely can. I know, for those of you who don't see me right now, like, if you're listening on Spotify, I have, like, my hair's blonder now because I actually have, I just worked on another project. But I still have dark curly hair, naturally. And you know, if you want to think of me as French, okay, I would be French. I don't want to blow it for you.
Okay. So I'll call myself out even more. So I think I told you I watched that movie. Oh, I think I was 11 or 12 when I saw it on cable. My mom worked night, so I was like left home alone. Sure. And so I thought it was a horror movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like I had no idea. I had no idea what it was. And so I watched it and I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. Oh. And as people are saying in the chat, mispronounced tentacles. That is.
Tentacles.
Yeah, that's still. There's so many lines from that movie that we quote, but like I said, growing up watching that film, I watched it recently. I had a date a few months ago, and we were about the same age. We're not dead, and we both talked about how we love that movie, so we agreed upon watching it.
So you can't date anybody who does not like this movie. This movie is a test. Like if you like someone, you still like, don't run. Okay, go that way really fast. If something gets in your way, turn. Okay, like
turn. Seriously. But I didn't. So I thought you were French, right? Because again, I'm like 11 or 12. I don't know anything. Sure. And somehow, I don't know if it was on cable or what, the television movie you did before Better Off Dead came on, where you're the seductress, you're like the Lolita type character with the same mom, the Easy woman that plays the mom.
Yes, with Kim Darby. Oh my gosh.
And God, what is the husband's name that you stole?
Barry Bostwick.
Barry Bostwick.
Yeah, was in the movie. He played, it's probably on YouTube right now if you haven't seen it, and it's called Summer Girl. And I play an evil babysitter, like who takes over a family, drugs the mother, kidnaps the kids. Yeah, it's very different than Monique.
You know what it is? I saw in the foreword, you know what's funny? So I'm reading the book, and in the foreword, Savage Steve Holland talks about your role in that movie and how it was kind of a precursor to The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. So if you guys are familiar with Rebecca De Mornay's character in Hand That Rocks the Cradle, she totally, you know, was inspired by your portrayal in that movie. But in watching that movie, first of all, I was like, what do you mean she's not French?
Oh,
And then, you know, that's one of those moments where you realize that they're just playing pretend on the screen and it's not real life.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, it's very interesting because I, as an actress, like that is the best compliment that you actually thought I was French, because obviously the story comes first. And, you know, when you're watching something, you know, the focus of it should be that you believe everything that's happening in the story, that you don't see the actor. So it's interesting for me. Like I just look at the parts and I go, ooh, I can get into this. And I really, you know, want to bring this character to life. But it is funny that, you know, I played good girls and bad girls and French girls and English princesses. And I played so many different, I played Yugoslavian girl with Charles in charge and played opposite Scott Baio, you know? And, you know, just, I don't know, just or Southern girl, you know. I did a show called Boone with Jennifer Tilly, and and Dallas the early years where I talked like with the Texas dialect, and
You were in Dallas the early years. I saw that. I did have to go through your catalogs. I was like, okay, I know this woman was in Bill and Ted, and I know she was in The Last American Virgin, which is a remake of their original movie that they made.
Lemon Pie.
And I have so many canon films. So I know you don't know me from Adam, but I will say this. I grew up again on cable. So I also grew up on like canon films.
Yep.
And I've fallen down a horrible rabbit hole of Charles Bronson films.
Yeah.
All the ones he did with canon, which are all the same movie. And I also have a fascination for Andy Sidaris films, the guy that made all those like Hard Ticket to Hawaii. Stuff that was like straight to cable. But
we're talking about this. This is the age when you're 12. I mean, you can't drive. You couldn't go to the movies at that age. You are certainly, I mean, even today, it's like, I always feel like, you know, when you're in that age where you're right before you're a teenager, it's sort of like your friends are going, you know, I dare you to watch this. Or you're going to watch it? And like horror films are your sort of rite of passage to go to becoming more grown up. You know, the minute you see something scary or even sexual, suddenly you're feeling like, well, I'm not a child anymore. I'm a little bit more mature. You haven't gotten, maybe you're not dating yet or anything. So it's that beautiful moment in life where these films are so crucial. And I think that my feeling is that films at that age really influence people's lives. And we learn so much about life through films, you know? So we learn what to do and what not to do, you know? Who to date, who not to date, you know?
Oh, definitely, 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 again. Like I said, you've just ruined me because every time I'm in a relationship, I'm like, what do you mean you can't fix a car?
Right. I was so capable in that movie. Like, where are these people who are capable? What happened? Right? Gosh, stop with the nails and the Botox. Let's just fix that car.
You know, yell at me about reading the manual. Like, there's nothing like...
Get me to do something. Come on.
The fact that you take the manual out, I'm like, oh, Jesus. But before we get into that film... And the reason why this show, the funny thing is, I couldn't think of a title for the show. And so when I wrote, we have a calendar and there's a person that makes all these thumbnails and stuff and sets the shows up. And he goes, so are we all set up for the week? I was like, yeah. He goes, and he's from the UK. He's like, so what's going on for Wednesday? It's like, the show should be in there. That's why it says Better Off Dead. But I do want to talk more about your career and actually kind of, we had some interesting conversations briefly off air about your takes on Hollywood. But real quick, let's talk a little bit about the books you've written, because it's not just books about your life. You've also written some children's books too.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so I do have a book that I've written, but I haven't published it. That's very funny. I wrote a children's book, but it's actually the main reason I did that was because of the art. And I'm an artist, actually, also. And I went to Otis Parsons for a year, and I do oil paintings, and I have oil paintings, and I've done colored pencil and acrylic. So I started to do this art, and I just thought I'd do a children's book about it. And I think there's like one kid. One day I went to a convention that I did, and I brought my book with me. And there's one child in the world who I gave my book to. I said, here, you just have this for free. You take this book, which is hilarious. So somewhere in the world, there's my book. It's called Diggy. And that's very funny. I have a book. It's about a giant cat, and it's very sweet. But more so, I've been writing. I wrote my first autobiography. And by the way, when you read the title, The Excellent Adventures of a Last American French Exchange Babe of the 80s. I love that you smiled, because that is what the title's about. You can't say that title without cracking a smile, right?
Well, I appreciate the fact that you know, you don't take yourself too seriously. I don't think we should take ourselves that seriously, where everything we do has to be. You know, again, this show is usually a very serious show, and we've had some pretty heavy episodes. The poor, you know, people have left some very nice comments. You know, we had a serious episode about I had an author on whose son had committed suicide, and he wrote a memoir about, you know, dealing with that loss and kind of finding yourself, you know, in that tragedy.
Yeah, sure. How do you go on? How do you move on in life? You know.
Yeah, and you know, so I was like, you know, this will be the great break. We can have some fun with this show. And I'm sure people that are watching will have some questions that they want to ask as well.
Yeah, no, and I want to bring up also that, you know, for me, why I keep bringing things forward and creating things is because life is an adventure, and it's really important to be brave and to take chances and do things and be creative and don't stop yourself just because you reached a certain age. You know, just why do we let the world tell us when to stop having fun? Like, that's not okay. Like, one of the things you'll notice about my work, and even today, I always want to surprise my audience. I always want to bring a performance that they never would expect, and it'll be exciting and sort of gives them something fun to look forward to, even if it's really serious. I mean, even if it's really heavy, you know, I want to surprise the audience. That's my personal goal with my performing. And that's like, no one's told me that. I think, you know, sometimes actors, they're obviously trying to work, they're trying to make a living. But I think the most important thing is the creative process. And to me, like, I teach acting, I an actress. I've done it my whole life. I started when I was 10 years old, and I'm still not daunted. I love performing and working and creating. So I think I think when you talked about, like, you know, heavy subject matter, mm-hmm. this is why, exactly, like, just like Monique, you can do it. Go out and do it, Len, you know? Fix the cow, do it. Don't stop it. Don't listen to these stupid people.
If you keep doing this, I'm going to ask you to just leave a voicemail for me. And just, Jason.
Good, Jason.
Get up. let's talk a little bit about your upbringing, because you do come from, sounds like, a modest upbringing in New York, mm-hmm. and your parents are definitely not industry people. They're immigrants.
Yep.
And they were not a showbiz family. And it sounds like, from what I read, you were the one that really pushed the acting, and your parents, if anything, were kind of like, if you don't really want to do it, you don't have to do it. Just tell us when to say when you want to say when, because you start off modeling at a very young age, like you said, like 10 years old.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I started wanting to be an actress when I was 4. And the reason why I say it is because my mode of entertainment was television. I was that kid put in front of the TV. I had no siblings that I was growing up with. At the time, my daughter.
You got 18 year difference between your sister, right?
Yeah. My half sister was much older. She was married. So to me, like, she just got married. I was raised by the television, essentially. And my parents, my mom, my dad would go to work. So I would live through the things I saw on television. You know, like, I mean, I remember there was some kind of special that Marlo Thomas did. And I remember, I think it was called Free to Be You and Me. And I wrote down a single line. I don't know if people did this, but you know, there was no recording then. So you had to listen and write it down. And I wrote down every line so I could act it out of that TV show. Like, I don't know. I don't know how I did it. Maybe was recording it on a cassette tape or something so I could listen back to it. But you know, that was the kind of things we did back in the 80s where if we loved something, we listened to it over and over again. We recorded it because we couldn't watch it on, like, a VHS. And I really loved Marlo Thomas's energy and her on the show That Girl. So, and she played an actress. So what happened was I fell into modeling because I really wanted to do acting. But my parents, again, you're right, they were very confused. What does this child want to do? We don't know what this is, but as long as she's okay, we'll go and try it. But, you know, it was really funny. Like, my parents were also older, so they were almost like grandparents. They were a little bit, they lived their life. And I think that they were in a place where, with me, they were very happy to have me. You know, I think that is an important part of being given an opportunity in a career. You know, I have heard so many, obviously, different stories about how people get into the entertainment business. Some people are discovered, some people are, they, you know, they're really young and they just, you know, do it against their parents' wishes. And some people are, you know, belated and, you know, and I used to think, wow, I wish that I had had more connections in the entertainment business early. But then I realized, you know, everybody has their time. You know, if you hang in it long enough, you will get your opportunity. It's just that the entertainment business doesn't, your success doesn't happen when you want it. It happens when the world wants it, when the world's ready for you. So
it's funny you say that. I got to work behind the scenes, definitely, on a kids' TV show tour. And one of the people on that show was Biz Markie. And I remember that was one of the things that he always said over and over again. He's like, everybody's got to wait their turn.
Yes, right.
You have to be patient and wait your turn, you know, I am the worst person in the world to tell that to, as I am, you know.
It's so hard. It's so hard. And believe me, I had 9 years before I got my first big role in a film. Like, big, I mean, it's slow little parts, films, tell the soap opera. But when I got my first part, that was 9 years. And there was a time where I thought, okay, I'm going to give up. And then that was the funny moment. I remember the next day I was like, I'm not going to act anymore. And then I thought, you know, I'm not going to do it. I had done an extra job on Endless Love with Brooke Shields starring, and she was just awesome. She was just beautiful and had all this going for her. And I thought, gosh, she's doing everything I wish I could do. You know, she's just the way the director spoke to her. I thought, she's a really, really nice person. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice if a lot of actors were nice? Like, what other nice actors? I just was like, if there's a nice actor, then that's the job. And then I thought, well, then what am I going to do? And I always liked science, and I thought, well, maybe I'll be a biochemistry major and find a cure for diseases, and that was kind of the next road I'd go. But then, I don't know, the next day I was like, you know what? I just don't want to give this up. And I thought, you know, there's room for more. There's just room for more performers. But it is really, you have to go to that place in yourself and ask yourself, what is worth my time? Because time is the most valuable thing you have in your life. Next, you know, at the same as health and time. Mm-hmm. Because money comes and goes. But where you spend your time is where you reap your benefits. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try this. So, it's painful. And, you know, the business is hard and there are things you want that you don't get. And that's the life. But so is any freelance profession, you know, dancers, musicians, singers, artists, you know, their lives are about getting the work, not getting the weekend to not work. Right?
That's very, yes.
We don't want those weekends.
That's very true. I don't know what one of those is. You know, years as a musician, the weekend one is like, oh, I'm definitely going to be in some different part of the world. Now, the Brooke Shields story is an interesting one because you talk about it in the book. And I guess you guys were going on auditions, not together, but mm-hmm. you'd show up at the same auditions. And it sounds like when you were coming up, doing commercials and stuff, that there were other people that actually had kind of broken out into TV around the same time from that area.
This is a very interesting time in my life. I was talking to another actress about it, Julia Montgomery. And we were talking about being in New York at the same time and how we had the similar managers. Like, she didn't have the same managers I had, but I knew her agent. And mm-hmm. so basically what it is in the 80s, like Sirius or 70s, that's just the 70s, you could not get on television, whether it be a commercial or print job or film, without representation, without serious people behind you.
Is that different now?
Yes. Now, I mean, now you can get on your own. You can make your own TV. You can make your own show on YouTube. You can create your own audience. You can. This is something where I look at people today and I go, my gosh, if I had this, you have the freedom that you have now, I would be making my own show with, you know, getting my own audience. And I would be the creative. I would create what I wanted to be, how I wanted to be perceived. But back then, you didn't have the opportunity to say, well, I want to do this and I'd like to do that part. That wasn't even a given. You got a script, you read it, there was a role that was up for, you know, you'd be part of. You could choose to do it or not, but if you chose not to do it, your representation may not be keeping you for that. Like, they may not hold on to you. Somebody else would do it. It was much more competitive. There were less people in the game, say, and the other actors you saw over and over again. As an example, my management company, I would see, and who was also with my manager was Elizabeth Shue, who I leaving Las Vegas, and she's great, and Lori Loughlin. We actually did a Coke commercial together and modeling. Who knew, right? Who else? Oh gosh, there was
some of the people from Facts of Life too, right? Were some Facts of Life people in your?
Oh yes, Billy Schachter, who was in Zapped. We did modeling together, and Brooke, I did modeling with her before I even saw her in Endless Love. We worked together, and which is very unusual. You can imagine how young she was because we were around the same height. I'm not very tall, so it was very early. But what was fascinating to me is that starting off then, there were people who did it and then they stopped for whatever reason. And then there were people who just kept going. And it's fascinating for me to be able to even talk about people today with you that mm-hmm. I worked with you know, over 50 years ago, and now, and they're still around, or they still hung on to the business. It's just a very selective group that hung in there. It just shows the tenacity that you had to have.
Is it a machine you feel like, again, I didn't get into acting. It never seemed interesting to me in the sense of I helped out on one small indie horror film. And I was like, this doesn't make, like, recording is way more fun. Recording music is way more fun. And as tedious as that is, I don't want to stand there all day long. Well, so sure. You guys can get light and, you know, miss a mark. And then the whole thing is like, right? F that. That doesn't sound like fun at all. Yeah, no, F that.
Oh, sure.
But is it besides the actual doing the work, it seems like the industry itself is just a meat grinder. And if you can withstand the industry for that long, because there's not too many people that keep doing it forever. Again, working on that kids show, there was a lot of actors and their kids that wanted to see the show. So I did get to meet a fair share of you people. And it is interesting that people are just like, I'm done with this. Too much. Like, I met Lou Diamond Phillips and nobody called him Lou Diamond Phillips. Everyone called him Richie Valens. And that movie had been 40 years old at that point almost. And I thought that was, I mean, the guy was in Young Guns.
Remember?
No one remembers him from Young Guns. No, he's just
another thing too. Like, just because that's another thing. Like today, just because you could be the biggest name, but a 5-year-old or 10-year-old, a 10-year-old or 12-year-old's not going to know who you are. They're just not going to know who you are. So if you're remembered, consider yourself lucky. But you still also, I would have to say there's no. Why should they remember you? Like, you know, you have to be important in their life. You know, you have to make sense in their life. That's why every generation has their generation, you know? What makes you it will make you not it. And you have to live with that. You have to deal with that. What I did for me was when I was really hot in the 80s, you know, working. And then, boom, the 90s hit. And it was like, okay, wait, you can't be it because you were an 80s girl. That's when I went and had family. That's when I...
Wait a minute. Time out. Rewind that for a second. Because you're not... So you're telling me... Mm. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're telling me that you are, you know, you're the princess in Bill and Ted. And the 90s are rolling around and they're looking at you and they're going, that's that 80s girl. We need a 90s thing. What was the 90s look they were looking for? Could you just not put on a choker?
Yeah, that's like, funny.
What were they looking for?
Well, you know, that's a good point. I think that first of all, I was going in towards the age of playing a mom or a, you know, parent or like that, just a different role, right?
At what, 28?
I know, isn't that interesting? Yeah, no, but even more so, the 90s had to have its own, you know, new person. It's a generation thing. I mean, I got lucky in the 80s. My career hit the beginning of the 80s. Mm-hmm. And I got my parts, you know, I mentioned this in my book. I have naturally curly hair and I would straighten it all the 70s. And then all of a sudden, by accident, I let my hair go curly one day and I booked Last American Virgin. And Last American Virgin is the first film that showed someone with curly, a teen with curly hair that was attractive. That was the dream girl. This was not a thing. It was all like the attractive girl was the beach girl with blonde hair or the Marsha Brady or the, you know, Farrah Fawcett. It was not a curly haired girl, dark curly hair.
Yeah.
So like that gave, in the truth, like that gave me my break, which is awesome. Like that was a great break. Then I got lead after lead after I did that. People wanted to see me. It's a whole look and a whole style. I mean, when you're talking about the entertainment business, it's not against the actor. It's about transition and time and growth and now, but here's the amazing thing. So having done that in the 80s, now coming full circle and working on projects again now, I would never have expected that. But it kind of does make sense because it, like you know, like your the other person said to you, you know, everybody's got their time, and you hang in long enough, people will remember seeing you, and they want to bring you back. So I don't know. It is. You can't take things personally as an actor, and you need to be ready. Like one of the things I'm really trying to even help other actresses with, for me emotionally, like I connect with other actors, and I say, listen, you know, don't give up on what you want. It's just, it's not, someone else is not going to make it happen. You know, you need to make it happen. And we can today, which we couldn't in the 80s or 70s. You know, you can make your career, you can make videos and send things out and, you know, show your other talents. I mean, I just made a music video recently, like to promote my book. Nobody asked me to do it, but I thought, you know what? I need that token song. I need to do this. I need that bucket list song where I'm wrote a song and I created and I'm, you know, and have young generation come and participate and have them show their dance talents. And it's not like, I think it's poorly in a way produced because I put it together, but I do think that it was an example of making things happen and being creative, you know? And again, don't stop it. You know, I don't plan to stop it.
I mean, this show is kind of, you know, a response to me not liking what I was seeing in media, and I was able to do it myself. There's a platform, right? There's an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
The entryway to doing these things is a lot easier than it was before. I do find it interesting that she said that there was, you know, kind of gatekeepers. When you start, you have to get in with a talent agency. And
there still is today, but it's different. It's very, today, the gatekeepers are looking not just for the actors, they're looking for people in sports, they're looking for TikTok people, they're looking for comedians, there's a wider range of who they will take as performers. Mm-hmm. And the art of acting has changed because in my time you would, you know, study or you, the, in my time, acting in itself was a beautiful, amazing thing to be and to see. And mm-hmm. the creativeness about it was amazing. Like, you know, again, I remember seeing Sophie's Choice and seeing, you know, Meryl Streep do that dialect. And like you, with me not being, knowing I was not French, you know, I looked at her and thought, you know, she is Polish. And when I found out she wasn't, that just blew my mind. That blew my mind. And so that magic is now not something that people are focusing on. They go, oh, well, that's a dialect. And you know, but can this person do an explosive, you know, stunt themselves in this actor? Oh, so Jesus. Things have changed. The expectation of the audience has changed.
For the better or the worse, or just changed?
I think that's a very good question. I think for the better, meaning that everyone can show their talent at any time, I think that's the better. For the worse, I think that anything is considered a talent and anything is considered excellent. No, I don't agree with that because excellence takes perseverance, work, you know, it takes a standard. And I think sometimes the standard is missing. You know what I mean?
We don't know what excellence is.
It's different, you know?
No, we talk about that kind of a lot on this show, especially when we talk about music usually. These conversations mm-hmm. come up about what's missing. I do want to ask, I do have these questions prepared. Savage Steve Holland, director and writer of Better Off Dead, said he was so desperate for casting the female lead that he felt his movie hung in the balance of who it would be. That may sound strange to people now, being that the movie was starring a relatively unknown John Cusack, who's now this, you know, big A-lister.
Right.
But you make that movie work. Actually, I would say you and your co-star is Amanda Weiss, correct?
Yeah, Amanda Wiss.
You guys make that work. She is really perfect at playing the oblivious girlfriend that has just dumped this man and gives no dams. Holland says you walked in and instantly he heard Angel sing. Can you tell us a little bit about that casting session when you went in for that audition for that role? Because again, he also mentions that you were coming off of that TV movie that you did with your the movie Neighbor Mom, and he was
right,
like,
Summer Girl.
I like this woman, but I don't know if this woman
can
be. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I can trust her. Yeah, when I went to audition for Better Off Dead, Savage Steve Holland, he thought that I was going to play Beth. He wanted me to read for Beth. I didn't see it at all, which was so funny. Like, I was like, why would you think of me for Beth? Because that's not, I just don't connect with that personality. And I didn't see what he was thinking because it was more my reputation, like in the work that I did before. And the other part was funny, was his name is Savage, and he is the cutest, like, blonde-haired, angelic-looking guy you've ever seen. And so I was expecting this guy who is, like, a savage, maybe a wrestler, I don't know, something different.
Not a volleyball player?
Yeah, like, not a volleyball player, but, like, somebody, like savage, you know? And so I think we were both surprised. I'll say one of the most exciting things about being an actress is when you go into a room to play a part, and this doesn't happen all the time because there's parts you want, but then there's the vision of the director. And in this case, Better Off Dead, the script was so beautiful, so funny. I mean, literally up until that point, I had been reading script after script, and this was the first script that didn't have gratuitous nudity, bad language, violence. It was just funny. And we were all kind of shocked, like, how are they going to sell this? Because this is just literally hilarious. How is this going to be made? And so when I got the script and I saw this French girl, and I played a French girl in a movie I just was coming from, and I just fell in love with this character. And I was so, this is what was so beautiful, coming into an audition, these moments happen where you go in and you're like, you know, I want it so much, but I, more so than anything, you have to see in this room my version of this character. Because whether I get it or not, I have no control over it, but you have to see what I see in her. And so I just took l'exist, and I was, you know, I think you should hire me for Monique. I don't understand why you don't want to, but this is, I think you should give me a chance. And he was laughing hysterically, and as with the other, the producer in it as well. And I think just, it goes beyond, sometimes when you go into a room, it goes beyond getting the part. It just is, it benefits the story. Like, again, you know, if you benefit the story, then that's all that matters. And so I really appreciate you saying that, because I think Monique is, what a wonderful role model it is for girls, no matter what generation sees it. It's like a hardworking, cool, she's athletic, she's feminine. And I really love that about the character. I really took that to heart. So if you see the film, just know that was perhaps my favorite part I ever played, because it was.
Well, I want to, we do a thing called movie night here on This Is Revolution, and we watch a movie together, us, the patrons, and usually they're kind of politically centered movies. If I choose it, it's definitely not. It'll be a little sillier. I mean, we watched Ninja 3, The Domination, starring, I don't know if you know, Lucinda Dickey, who was also a Canon Films actress. She did the Break-In movies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a handful of you women that definitely made my preteen years for me. But
I helped you grow up. Yes.
But you write in your book that you're deaf in one ear. Mm-hmm. So you have to communicate a lot by looking people in the eye and, like, facial expressions. And so the first half of that movie, the first act, you don't really speak and you just nod a lot, mm-hmm. which definitely makes those jokes. So I have two questions for you. Was that something that you came in there kind of telling them, like, look, because I got, like, one bum ear, mm-hmm. I'm finna nail these looks? And were you the designer for your clothes? Because the date that I had when we were watching, we were like, she's got some badass outfits. That Christmas outfit, were you able to keep any of that?
Oh, I loved the clothes. I was the luckiest person. I remember we went shopping and we had to get the clothes. Let me tell you, they had to make it look, everything had to look a little stylish. And at the beginning, you know, at first, I wanted to keep the clothes. I got to keep the coat. And I found recently the ski outfit, not the jacket. I don't know.
Maybe the last ski outfit when you're doing all the ski stuff at the end. Oh, okay.
I have a pink overall.
The pink one, yeah.
But the clothes were so fine. They were great. And, the only thing, what happened was when we did the film, at the first part of the film, you don't know I don't speak English. You think I only speak French. What I did was I added the real French because it was not in the script. And I thought, no, you know, if somebody comes from another country, they're going to speak their native language. If they're upset, they're going to speak their native language at some point. So I added the real French. So, I just put myself in her head and thought, okay, what would she do? And Savage was really open about it. He was really, that's why I love him as a director, because he let me do some of the things that I was interested in. But I loved his script. You know, his script.
How did you guys keep a straight? Okay. Why did you keep a straight face? So the first time you speak English in the film is, again, a line I cite all the time. He tried to put his testicles all over me.
Yes.
How did you? How many takes did that take? I need to know. I feel like you didn't just nail that. That was, had to be an all-nighter. And you shot it at night too.
I think that scene. I think was funny because I took myself very seriously when I said that. He's a sex addict, Ricky. You know, and I just did it so seriously. And I think John, I really was curious. I know John's doing it. He's going to be screening Better Off Dead, and I really always wanted to know if he was going to laugh at that, if he thought it was funny, because I didn't see them because I was so into it. We didn't shoot that. We maybe did a couple of takes, but people were laughing very hard. I mean, the thing that I noticed the most is when I was performing, and especially with Laura Waterbury, who, you know, went Christmas, wrecking, you know, when she screams my face.
That woman also kind of steals the show.
I'm dead. I mean, unbelievable. We would see the cast and the crew, like the other, you know, people behind the camera, literally turning away and shaking their bodies because they were trying not to laugh and blow the take. I mean, it was cripplingly funny. It was very funny. We just, you know, we just stayed in the zone, tried to stay focused and do it.
Another question. How do you keep a straight face for the dinner scene for the French fries? Like, I know everyone reads the script and you know how it's going to come out, but when you see the way she delivered those lines, like, again, whoever did casting, for me, that movie is kind of the perfect casting for a moment in your life where all these things are the biggest deal ever, right? That
and
first
every
big
little
break,
thing.
Yeah.
Like, even the smaller characters, you know, the character of the girl, the lawyer's daughter, you know, who John has to date. I mean, with the giant thing, and like, she is so no BS, you know, she's just really straight out. And I forgot now, her name escapes me, but she's awesome. I have an interview with her in my book. It's just amazing. I mean, just that's one of the reasons why I wrote my book, because every moment, and I write a chapter on everybody, because I know when you watch this movie, this is a movie you can watch over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so everybody is so special and endearing and funny. I mean, the teacher scene where he's teaching, Vincent Schiavelli plays the teacher, and
the class, you know, is, yes.
And he says for people to pull out their homework, and everyone pulls out like computers, and that wasn't a thing back then. People didn't have computers in the classroom. So that might not be funny to people now, but then it was the piece of paper with a gum in it. That was your homework.
That's how I felt in high school, especially where I went to high school in Albany, California. I felt like everybody was nine steps ahead with their computers. Yes. and and huge manila file folders, and they loved all the homework. And you know, when the teacher assigns like 30 pages to memorize the next day, everybody was excited about it.
Yeah,
like,
right. How did you feel it?
That for me, because I went to a high school where like athletics wasn't that serious, I felt like those moments of that movie for me really captured what it was like to be the dude that always felt like he was a little bit outside and didn't really fit in, and yeah, definitely got dumped by the girlfriend, who really, it's not really established if she's quote the hot girl at school, because she's kind of not, which I think is also real funny about the film.
Yes. By the way, Amanda Wiss, by the way, she is awesome. She is such a nice girl. We see each other. And by the way, I still see people from Better Off Dead, which shows you what a...
Can you tell Amanda that you had a good time on This Is Revolution? She should come on as well.
I will tell her. It is most excellent. Right?
Because Amanda was also in one of my favorite movies as well, of course, Nightmare on Elm Street. She's Tina in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, no, she's awesome. And... you know, it's funny with that film too, because we weren't playing the typical characters. It was its own, like Amanda was her own person. She was adorable. Her voice is so cute. And it's like, there's no, I don't know if you could say there's bad guys, but it's more like everything is sweeter. I mean, even Ricky is, he's a bad guy, but Ricky's a bad guy, but he's goofy. No, like he's not dangerous. He's just kind of creepy. And then
he's the perfect big bad for a movie that's not. If it comes out around the same time as Revenge of the Nerds, right?
Yeah.
And it's so antithetical to a lot of the 80s movies that are coming out, the John Hughes movies even that are coming out at that time, because I think it takes itself seriously to a point, but it's so satirical.
Yes.
Whereas the John Hughes stuff, I rewatched recently, another date. I rewatched.
Oh, you get around.
Hey.
They have to pass. They have to pass these tests, these 80s tests.
They do. And we watched The Breakfast Club, and I hadn't seen The Breakfast Club in like a gajillion years.
Yeah.
And I was like, and this is going to, people are probably going to get mad at me for this. It didn't hold up.
Oh my gosh, I have to share something with you that's really interesting. I showed The Breakfast Club recently to someone and they didn't get it. And I was like, what? Like, that was the movie. That was the movie. So maybe it's because, I mean, it John Hughes films were taken seriously, and they really helped 80s, the generation of the 80s grow up. Better Off Dead never took itself seriously, but you always laughed, and you always understood the point, and you always felt good after you watched it. It's definitely a feel-good film.
I mean, it could go the way of Karate Kid if it really wanted to, and I don't know if anybody's trying to get Savage Steve Holland to expand the script. I don't know if you followed what happened with Karate Kid, where they came back with Cobra Kai and literally, you know, has everybody back. I think Elizabeth Shue even came back for a couple of episodes for that, which I thought was kind of, only a fan can make that film, right? Like, hey, what does the world look like from Johnny's perspective? So, you know, could you do that with Better Off Dead? I don't know.
There's some things that are percolating. I know that we went back to, we did a reunion recently in Georgia, and the producer, Andrew Meyer, was able to get all of us together. In fact, we had the Camaro there. The actual Camaro was at this gathering.
Your movie also makes me want to, was it 69 Camaro?
69 Camaro, yeah. I think it is, yeah. And I'm hoping, he said that he wanted perhaps maybe do a tour of Better Off Dead. Maybe there's a musical, I don't know. We're gonna see. I know that a lot of things like this are happening. And of course, I've been always saying, you know, wouldn't it be, I even ran into John and I said, we should, imagine if we did Better Off Dead grown up. I mean, there's not a lot of time, but you know, imagine, I mean, the fans would go crazy if John and I were in like a ski town and, you know, we had our kids and they were now the new Lane, the new Moniques, you know, I'm giving skiing lessons, and I don't know. You know, there's
it worked for Cobra Kai. I haven't watched all of the seasons of Cobra Kai. I was surprised that it did as much as it did, but you know, the business, you know, if this works, let's just keep squeeze it out till there's just nothing left. But I thought about a lot when I was watching Breakfast Club, because I'm watching it and it does take itself like extremely seriously, right? Mm-hmm. And you're kind of sitting there going, I don't know if I really give a damn about these kids.
Yeah.
Some years later, it didn't hit me the same way I think it did when I was younger, because those movies were supposed to be super important movies. And I feel like I can always go back and watch Better Off Dead. And however I felt when I watched it when I was like 12 years old, I still get that same feeling. Especially it's like Sade for me. It's kind of go-to breakup
movie. I love
Sade.
That's so funny.
That's what it is for me. It's like, let me go feel sad for a minute, because you know, there's nothing like the scene in his car where all the sad songs come on the radio.
Doesn't that always happen? Yeah. Like, doesn't that always happen?
Always happen.
That, you know, and here's the thing, that is Savage. He is brilliant. And I mean, I, if you see in my book, you know, what happened was when I told people that I was gonna write this book, and this book is called The Excellent Comedy of the Last American French Exchange Babe of the 80s. So you have to look up Diane Franklin book, Better Off Dead Tribute. It's a long thing. But anyway, Savage, when I told him I was writing this, he said to me, I said, do you want to write like a paragraph or something? I would love it if you could just contribute. And he sent me like 30 pages. He sent me all this stuff. And I was like, oh my God. He goes, Diane, are you kidding me? Like, I love that film. That was my first film. It meant so much to me that you were in it. And I'm so proud of it. And so this book is just like the most beautiful thing, because it's all like the special features and all the special things that even I didn't know. So, but I guarantee you get this book, you will laugh out loud. There is no way you will not laugh out loud. He is a genius. He's so funny. And it was just.
Well, he did, Savage follows this up with, not Hot Pursuit. What was it called? I can't remember the name. It was on the tip of my tongue too. It's a little more to me in line with 80s stuff of that time, where there's a rich douchebag and the rich, there's a regatta race. It's Demi Moore's first, I think, starring role.
And John was signed in for that, for his contract. So it was very hard, you know, after
One Crazy Summer.
Thank you. I blanked. John was in, he was in Better Off Dead, and when he finished it, he had been signed to do, I thought maybe three movies, but maybe it was only two. And so he was already scheduled to do it. And Savage actually put me in that film at the end, but had to cut it. It was like, I was walking by and waving to John as I walked by. But Demi was in it. So I guess, but it wasn't the same chemistry that we had in our film. Our film, everyone loved being in Better Off Dead. It was really special. I mean,
why did you guys make Roy Stalin stop acting?
Roy, I know, like, what happened, Roy? And that's another thing. Roy is adorable. He's a villain, but he's a doofus villain. Like, he's so lovable.
And that was his first ever role, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't
know. He never did anything after that, right?
You don't know. You know, I talked to Aaron. I mean, Aaron, you can access Aaron on Instagram, and he's there. But I don't know. I don't know why he stopped or what happened. Maybe he did it and then the business was crazy. I don't know. You know, again, not everybody wants to stay in it or can stay in it. It's really hard. Because I started so young, I saved my money, and I was able to stay in it for long enough when there wasn't work. But it's a hard business, you know. It takes a lot of perseverance and hanging in there and not getting down about it. And for those people who stop, like, again, maybe that's all they wanted, you know. They just wanted to be in one movie, a good movie, and they're out, you know. Wow. Yeah.
That's a hell of a, you know, that's your 1,000% batting average. You came in to pinch hit one day and you got a hit and you hit for 1,000 because he nails that role. There's nothing about him that looks like he's out of place. And again, Diane, I watch a lot of what some people call B movies. I watched them all. Uh-oh. Is she gone? I can't hear her. They're messing with the internet outside, and I'm really terrified. Uh-oh.
Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Can you see me?
Yes, something happened at your house?
Yes, I got a ring. I got a call.
Okay, so I got scared because I live in Mexico and sometimes I'll be having like Mexico problems. And right now I'm literally looking at the internet man and he's crawling up the pole where the internet.
I got shut off.
And so I was about to just end it because I was like, oh, they're going to shut me off again. So I was terrified and I'm glad that it was just you and not the forces that beat because I want to yell out, please don't cut my shit off. He's climbing up this ladder. I wish I could show you guys what's going on.
That's so funny. Now, I don't see you for a minute. I don't know why I don't see you. I'm trying to look.
Oh, I'm small on the screen. Look for the small black man on the corner of the screen.
Well, you're awesome, but let me see. I'm going to try to. Okay, I'm going to push some buttons and see what happens.
I'll change
it. There we are. Back it. I got it. Okay, good. All right, good. We're back.
I'm just really hoping that man don't shut this. So if I disappear, you guys.
Okay. So.
I'm streaming. Just please don't shut me off. I think he's fixing my.
Are people making comments to you? Because I don't see anybody, so I would love.
People are sending all kinds of comments.
I saw them. Hey, everybody, listen. I wish I saw the comments. I don't see them.
I've never seen Better Off Dead. Probably too busy watching Porky's 3 on Cinemax late night.
I worked with the guy who was in Porky's. Roger Wilson.
Is that the guy that puts his? Yeah, he puts his hog. The guy that puts his hog through the peephole.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And that was the guy in Last American Virgin.
No. Victor, the guy who played Victor. I don't know. Let me think.
I thought he was in that movie as well.
He could have been. I didn't know if he. I didn't know he was in it. Porky's. I hadn't seen in a long time. So
speaking of those films of the 80s, there was a moniker, the Brat Pack. Sorry, there's a very angry dog behind me. Aww. There's a moniker called the Brat Pack. And I was watching an interview with Andrew McCarthy, and someone brought that up to him, like how cool it was to be in the Brat Pack. And McCarthy was like, dude, it was kind of not cool because the way that article came out where they called us the Brat Pack, it was a pejorative to be in the Brat Pack. Now you're doing stuff around the same time as these people. They're literally your contemporaries. Was it something you wanted to be a part of? Did you want to get mentioned in that crew? Or were you cool to kind of not have to deal with? Because not everybody from that crew, really, like you said, the 90s were not kind to Ally Sheedy and who else?
Molly Ringwald or no? I don't know.
Molly Ringwald had a rough time in the night.
Well, that's
you
what
can't
I,
be 16 forever. Yeah.
What makes you it will make you not it. And you know, people would go at, I mean, it makes sense. People would go after them just because they want to say, you're not it. We need a new it, which, okay, whatever. That's life. But Brat Pack, that's interesting. First of all, this is a funny thing. There's this thing called 80s in the Sand, and Andrew McCarthy is supposed to be at it. And I've been doing it for years. And this year, I'm going to go, but I'm not going as a guest, but usually I am. So it's funny. I'm going to ask him about this because he's going to be there with Daphne Zuniga and also Catherine Stewart. And Amanda Wiss and I are also going to be there. But we're going to be on the side this time. They're going to do the signings. But 80s in the Sand is a week-long 80s vacation. So anybody who wants to know about it, I think it's called The Sands now. So check out The Sands Rocks or something on Google and you'll find out about it. It's amazing. Real, like Pat Benatar is going to show up. They've had Billy Idol, The Motels, Berlin, Sebastian Bach. Anyway, that's a side note, but I'm a big fan of that event because it's totally 80s. So if you love 80s, you're going to meet the real band, the real celebrities, and it's close and up personal and it's awesome. Anyway, on to the next. Brat Pack. I have to say, I'm glad. I would have loved to meet those, work with those actors, not meet, but work with them. Mm-hmm. That would have been awesome. And I really tried very hard to sort of, I mean, I auditioned for the things that they did.
Did you audition for Less Than Zero?
No, I mean, see, here's the thing. I didn't do Less Than, they didn't audition me for Less Than Zero or the Brat Pack, but I went for like 16 Candles, Karate Kid, Flashdance.
You went for Flashdance?
Yeah, and I got a call back. Could you imagine? You got a call back
for Flashdance?
Flashdance, I know.
Let's get in our Wayback Machines.
I know.
Are you taller than what's her name? Are you guys about the same height?
That's probably why. I was small, so I'm like 5'2". She's like nice and tall and yeah, beautiful.
What is her name again? She was great in Frankenstein.
Jennifer Beals.
She's great.
Beals, right?
Yeah, Beals.
Jennifer, but you see, here's the thing. And to me, when I had my curly hair, it brought ethnicity to be fashionable. Jennifer Beals was like the first lead that was stunning, gorgeous, that was like a young girl who was ethnic, you know, like that wasn't happening. It wasn't out in the 80s. She was a breakthrough, you know. That film was a breakthrough. I mean, Fame was big, but Flashdance, that was a big deal. I mean,
that's Ninja 3, The Domination is part ninja movie, part Flashdance, if you've never seen.
That's funny.
I'm being totally serious.
Right. No, I believe that. I absolutely
you, did. You probably did one of the tentpole canon films, I would say, that they really wanted to hang their hats on and say, like, we are real filmmakers here. And
that's interesting. From
reading about them and watching the documentary, you know, say what you will about some of the kind of exploitative things that they did about Palestinians. In all those Delta Force movies,
right?
But they really, really wanted to make the lemon drop? Is that what it was called?
Lemon popsicle
in Israel.
Was based and that on was the director's real life.
Yeah. So they were real serious about that film, and you know, then they just start doing all these insane copycat cash-ins, and I think that Canon in the 80s, there was no one better at the copycat cash-in, and then they kind of blow it when they sign people like Sylvester Stallone to those mega huge deals, and you know, ultimately he didn't care, he just took the money and did my favorite arm wrestling film of all time, Over the Top.
Oh, that's so good.
You know,
but you see, they wanted to be a huge studio. Mm-hmm. And they said, I'm going to go for it, you know? And you know what? I mean, I just think good for them.
They had pride,
you know?
They had a moment. Said,
we want to compete because it is hard to compete with other studios. I mean, it's impossible, you know? So, but you were bringing up something. Brat Pack. Yeah. So I know, I don't think that I didn't want to be part of the Brat Pack, like be thought of that way, but I definitely wanted to work with them. And I worked with Ally Sheedy actually on a movie of the week called Deadly Lessons, where I played this farm girl going to this rich prep school, and Ally was in it, and you could probably see it on YouTube. And I worked with Bill Paxton too.
Bill Paxton, man.
All these names, Bill right? Paxton. Like just, oh.
So first of all, I want to say this to anyone watching, and I want to let you know this, Diane Franklin. I, again, 46 years old, left to my own devices, the movie of the week was The Bee's Knees for me. If it had mom from Facts of Life in it or Nancy McKeon, I was going to watch that thing.
Wow.
And so I found a bunch of them on Amazon, and there's a bunch on YouTube. So if you tell me a movie of the week that you were in, yes, I will go try to find it, because the drama in those movies.
Yep. The drama. Oh, my God.
The drama in those movies. Love the movie of the week.
Yeah, people waited. They waited all week long, you know, to see those movies. It was very exciting. I mean, again, remember, we only had 13 channels in the 80s or 70s. Only 13. No, let's say the 70s, maybe the 80s too. Only 13 channels. And those, maybe three of them were cable or something, you know. It was very different. And if you couldn't record things. So if you missed watching something, you were out. Like, you weren't cool. Like, you just.
You had to wait till the season was over.
Right, you wait till the season's over. And, you know, so like you'd be. You know, like, it'd be dinner time and you'd be like trying to eat really fast so you could go watch the show, because then tomorrow you could talk about it with your friends. But if you missed it, you're out. Like, you just.
Well, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. I know I don't have you for much longer, and I appreciate you staying for a little bit later. I really do. I hope you're having a good time with this conversation.
Oh, of course. It's excellent.
Here's a question. I would love to get your take on this as someone that's come up in different stages of television, from when it was just three major networks and local to the beginnings of cable to satellite. Now, those were curated experiences for us. And shows didn't last that long. Cosby lasted for, what, 6-7 years? Cheers, about the same amount of time. And these are shows that are kind of still staples in people's minds when we think about certain actors, right? Ted Danson has been acting for 50 years plus, and he's still Sam Malone in somebody's eyes, right?
Yeah.
That being said, shows, it seems like they're lasting a lot longer, and they all seem to be the same show. The Office is probably, I would love to know the streaming numbers, like how much bandwidth on an average Tuesday night The Office takes up, as people are still watching a show that's over 10 years. It's been over for over 10 years.
Wow, that's, I didn't even realize that, huh?
It's been a while, right? And so things like The Simpsons are still running, Family Guy is still running. I understand they're animated, but you also have shows like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yep.
Granted, not network. I think television is going to look a little different in this new era. Do you think you'd have a different career if you came out now, knowing that there's just such longevity in doing a show? If you were a voice actor on something like King of the Hill, that's like 15-year show.
Yeah.
Who was getting 15-year shows that wasn't a soap opera? And you were on soap operas.
You come up
on soap operas. And also, I want to ask you, do you feel that the lack of soap operas is hurting acting? Because we're getting so many Australian actors, because they still do soaps. We're kind of learning the ropes. Mm-hmm. There's a huge difference between doing soaps, learning the ropes, learning how to hit a mark, learning how to deal with directors, learning how to deal with other actors, and standing in front of a camera doing TikToks and getting a million followers and then trying to fall into TV. Like, we saw people fail thinking they could go from Vine to movies or YouTube to movies.
So I'd like
to get your kind of take on what we see right now in television and cinema.
Okay, so first of all,
that was a lot. Sorry.
Yeah. No. Okay. I'm gonna try to remember everything. I want to go back to the. Okay. So the soap opera thing. Soap operas are very good training for actors. They really are. Mm-hmm. You don't get more than two takes. You have to memorize your dialogue very quickly, and it's very good technical training. Hit your mark, lighting, and everything like that. Yes, absolutely. Okay, so other actors coming to America to do things is more of a financial thing, I think, too. Like, you know, they shoot things in Canada, so they'll use a lot more maybe Canadian actors because it's a cheaper way of making the shows work. And Australia, I'm sure that this, you know, it's cost effective for them to use people from different countries. Or you know, bring them in, you know, and perhaps manipulate their career more so than somebody who's just here, but somebody come and go, oh, this is a new person and we're going to make, you know, put them in the spotlight and we're going to show you what we want to show you about them and not what we don't want to show. But let's see, I'm trying to remember all the different things you were asking. Okay. So you said there's a longevity in shows now. I see a shortness of shows. Like back in the day when you were on a show, since there were more people got to know you because there was less content out there. So One Day at a Time, anybody who was living around that generation knew all the actors of One Day at a Time, got to know them every week. And it was like a family member. Again, television was seen as people we get to know and spend our week with. And we learn how to deal with life. Films were the movie stars. That was a different, that was something, a special thing. You know, you're leaving your house to go watch something. And so these were technically the stars. We didn't get to know them anyway, except as the character they are in the story. Mm-hmm. And so it was just a different relationship. And today, I mean, but again, and at that time too, if you did film, agents and managers were strongly recommended you didn't do television. And if you did television, they said, don't do commercials. And if you did, but everybody wanted to do other things because it all offered different opportunities. Commercials, you make a lot of good money. Then everybody always, actors always want to do theater because then they could really get into these juicy parts. So, anyway, that's, I mean, probably not making much sense, but there are so many different realms of the entertainment business. But when you're talking about today, so first of all, entertainment has gotten a shorter attention span. So TikTok stories can be told really fast, get the point, move on. And because we have phones and we're looking at things, we want to get a lot of entertainment and we want to know a lot really quickly. We don't seem to. Now, if something takes a long time, we just almost don't have the time to watch it.
Well, would you say that there's shows? So I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, and we're both industry adjacent, right? We all know people in the industry. And there's like second screen is a term that's used. Like this is second screen show. Like we know that you're going to be doing whatever it is you're doing with two screens. You know, think of Modern Family.
Right.
Is lasted a very long, like that little girl can vote. Some of these shows have lasted forever.
Audiences have gotten to know these characters and they want to see them grow up. They want to see. And then the storylines are somewhat similar, like the same maybe because obviously they worked the first time, they're going to work again. I mean, familiarity is very important in the entertainment business. We feel it's like seeing an old friend from high school or college. You know, we want to see that again. I will say that it is very difficult if you're, let's say, a kid on a show and then you grow up and perhaps you change and then people are going, I want to see you as a kid again. Or maybe it takes them a while to warm up to you as an adult, you know. But I think every performer has to deal with that, whether you're a musician or an actor or a dancer, like as you grow up, you have to, they say, reinvent yourself. I say just grow up and just discover yourself, get to know yourself, and then have something to say. You know, you don't want to, you need to, just because you're in the movies doesn't mean you have to something to say. And I think it's important. And I think everybody needs to do this in your 20s. If you're 20 in your 20s, get to know you. Get to know who you are, what you will tolerate, what you won't tolerate. This is really important about growing up, and you will be a happier person once you figure that out. Because if you don't know who you are and you don't really get into that and dig deep, then why should anybody else be interested in you? Like, do you know what I'm saying? You have to give of yourself. Today also, you're not just playing characters sometimes. You are a persona, I guess, of some sort. So you need to, all I can say is it's part of growing up. We got to get to know yourself and life will be a lot easier, better.
You know, Law and Order is another thing that comes to mind. Like that show was on what season, you know, 147.
Oh, okay. That's been on forever.
That show has been on for so long. The people that were in the new Law and Order like 10, 15 years ago have retired from acting. Like, it's just, it's been on. Mariska Hargitay refuses to age.
Mariska too. I should ask her. I want to be on the show. It's actually about time that she's gone through every other guest star, and I should ask her if I should be a guest star.
Do you really want to be a cracked out lady?
Yeah, I know. That's what I would be, right?
You saw what they did to, what's her name? Oh, what is her name? She's got all the family members in the industry. She's got the brother that was in Scream.
I'm drawing a blank.
She was in Stigmata. I can't think of her name.
And the audience is knowing this right now. The audience is yelling out.
Okay, guys, who was the woman that was in, she was in Desperately Seeking. She was in Desperately Seeking
Susan. Rosanna Arquette?
Okay, Rosanna Arquette. Who's the younger sister?
Oh, yes. Oh, she's great. I love her.
She was in a Law and Order, and she can't be that old. She's probably what? I don't know how old anybody is.
Yeah.
But they made her look like she had been through the ringer. Yep. She played some cracked out ass prostitute.
That is.
I mean, she killed the role, but I'm just like, do I want to get that phone call from Mariska? Like, hey, we got my cousin. my cousin was in Law and Order as a shitty. He's the dude that beat Danny Pino's real kid.
Wow. Yeah, I have to think about that now, actually. But now,
like,
if you're an actor, you love the drama.
I guess you love the drama. If please send me a message if you get that call. Like, playing a cracked out prostitute on SVU.
Are you ready to have me as a guest star? That would be kind of cool. So, yeah. But I knew Mariska from, we took an acting class together for a couple of years, and she's very cool. She's super nice. But you're right. That show is her life. It's her life, you know? They'll never separate her from Olivia, her character.
Yeah. I mean, Ice-T, is he even a rapper anymore?
I remember when he was. I know.
I'm sure he has, like, I know he tours and does all that good stuff, but it's like, look, dude, they still treating you like you knew on the force. You've been on the show for 25 years.
Amazing. You're taking me back. You really are.
You talked about yourself the way I talk about myself. I was a child raised in front of a television. I read the newspaper. I would read the TV guide while my mother was in the grocery store. I could tell you what time it was by what was on television on whatever channel you put it on. So I don't live that way anymore, but I love doing shows like this. If you, and I get it if you say no, but I want to put you on the spot because I'm a dickhead. If you would be down to come on a movie night, because there are some people that said we'd be down to watch Better Off Dead for movie night. Aww. If you could bring Amanda for a movie night and have the two women that just make that movie, oh my God.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. I have to check with her, and who knows? I'll say... Possibly.
Are you on the West Coast?
Yes, I am.
So I do have to ask one last question.
Yeah.
So you are an industry family. Your husband is a writer.
Yeah.
Is he part of, is his family producers as well?
Distantly related.
Okay. So he's related to the people that made all the movies that I love.
Well, he's more related to Robert De Laurentiis, who did Providence, executive produced Providence, and Fargo, and Orange County, I think, or
Orange County, the movie.
The OC.
Oh, the OC.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the more the television side, but.
And you have a child who's also writing and acting.
Yes, Olivia.
And your child, Olivia, mm-hmm. is the spitting image of you. Does she get mad? Because I saw that she straightens her hair. I'm sure she's like, I don't want nobody to ask me for my goddamn mama. Does she get mad when people tell her she looks just like her mom? Number one. Number two.
She got used to it. When she was like a teenager, she's like, oh, they're going to ask. They're going to say we look like sisters again. You know, it was very funny.
I saw there's because she's an actress and she's also writing. So did you and your husband try to keep her away from the business? Were you like, hey, were you like your parents with it? Like, if you dig it, you dig it. If you don't, you don't.
Oh, well, okay. So I have my daughter, Olivia, and my son, Nicholas, Nick. And so the first thing was when they were younger, like, you know, if your parent is an actor, the kids are going to at some point in their life, and I don't, even if they're 30, are going to turn to you and say, why didn't you try to get me into acting? Okay. So like knowing that, when the kids were little, Olivia, she had a photographic memory. So I said to her, and we were very creative, and I always like played imaginary games with her, and like, we just were creative family. And I said to her, do you want to try acting? And she's like, yeah, sure, I will try it. And it came so easily to her because she has this great memory, and she was very relaxed with this and fun, and she loved it, but she also loved comedy. So we did comedy and stuff, and then my son, he has bright red, beautiful red curly hair, and so he fell into it because like they'd be like, oh, bring her, and now bring the little brother too. So they both got into the business. But then I was like, well, that was my life. I just want to give you the opportunity, if you like it or not, this is a chance to learn about it. And Olivia, she loved writing and creating and acting in her own movies. So she was growing up at a time when you just started getting those laptops at home. For her development, it really was a part of just having the accessibility to be able to create your own films and movies. So she did a lot of student films to start, and she literally wrote her first film honestly at five, but she got her first film award at 12, I think. She wrote film, and I think her first film award was at 12. Like, surreal. Like, she got the LA, it's just so many things. She got another film award at the LA Film Festival. Like, but it was very self-driven for her. And with my son, he started with acting, but he was like, no, I want to do music. And so he loves music. And so I was like, fine, at least we did it. Now move on. So now, just as you're asking this, he just graduated from Northwestern and is now a professional orchestral bassist. He's with he's with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, playing assistant principal. And he just came from literally Switzerland the other day, playing at the Lucerne Festival the Lucerne Orchestra Festival. So anyway, just saying that, very creative, but also everybody does their own thing, which is great. Like, that's the whole point. The point is that everyone's happy doing what they love. So check out Olivia De Laurentiis on TikTok. I'm doing a little promo. It's under Syd and Olivia, S-Y-D and Olivia, on TikTok, and you will see her looking like me, but she's hilarious, brilliant.
I was looking at pictures. I was like, oh, that poor little girl looks just like, I'm sure there's grown men walking up to her all the time. Like, you haven't aged a bit. Like, if you don't get away from me, you nasty old man, I'm a child. It's my mama you talking about.
That's very funny. She's a pro. She knows how to deal with it. It's very funny though. And I'm telling you, I love my kids. My husband, we adore our kids. We just, that's a whole other podcast. I mean, we just saw Olivia recently. We've been talking to our son. You know, he lives in Chicago, and we just hang out with him. And he's part of he's in an indies band called, also on top of doing the orchestral work, he does bass playing, and he's with a band called Swatches. And then he does his own music under Nick De Laurentiis. So check it out. And who knows where that's all going to lead.
Is he doing scores and stuff like that or no?
He's writing his own. He writes his own music, but he also writes with Swatches. And then with orchestral music, does everything from new music to, I mean, he's not writing his new music yet, but I see him as a composer. I mean, even a classical composer, just an amazing gift for music. Wide range. I don't know. Check his stuff out. It's really, it's poetic.
The proud mom.
Now you're on a whole
Hey, if you are, I'm a parent. Don't hide it. I love it.
Yeah, you got it.
I love it.
Just, you know, if you have a child, value it, because not everybody gets that opportunity. And your child just wants you to love them. And when you love them, they will grow. They will blossom. And let them do their own thing. Let them explore life. It's hard, but I don't know.
I'm going to tell my kids, I was like, look, kids, you ain't doing enough with your life. Look at the Franklins, the De Laurentiis.
Go after your, yeah, they got to connect with their passion. I need an hour.
No,
with
my
just
kids.
Give me an hour. I'll change their life. All right.
I'm teasing. I need to stop making fun of my kids for the daddy. We saw the show.
My kids are,
you're going to really laugh at me. You want the youngest to oldest or oldest to youngest?
I'll take youngest to oldest.
5, 17, 20, 25.
Nice. So the 5-year-old's going to be the performer.
I want all of them to stay as far away. You know, it's funny. I did the opposite thing. So my daughter is the oldest. She's 25. And I took her the moment that she was old enough that her mom would let me take her out of the house. And I was 21. So I still had friends that were like, dude, let's go hang out. I'm like, but I got this kid. They're like, well, just take the kid. And I was like, can I just take the kid? I'm taking the kid. So she went to shows. Before she could even like really walk that well, we just would sit her on stage because I would know the bands and stuff. And she's been going to. So it worked out exactly the way I wanted it to work out. Anything dad does is not cool. So I don't, she doesn't want a show business person. She doesn't want an industry guy.
Yep.
They all want their lives to be very nice and normal because their dad is a big enough doofus. So I understand.
Good.
I had a different strategy. The 5-year-old, to your point, is very different. And
yep. Call me when you need acting lessons.
Oh, his mom would be very excited if he could, because he's a ham. I just saw him. He just turned five.
I can just tell you right now.
Phoenix Joaquin. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Diane Franklin.
Thank you so much. I had a great time.
Please don't hang up too quick before we go. I'm going to play the outro music. Thank you guys all for checking this out. I hope you guys had fun. Like I said, it's been a heavy week or so of shows on the channel. I hope you guys all had fun. I'm going to try to ask Diane again if we can bring her back at some point for movie night so we can all watch Better Off Dead. It would be so awesome if we could watch it with Miss Wiss. That would, to have both of you guys, and we just watch it virtually like this, and there's a bunch of us, and it's just a good time. Everybody has fun. So that's why you become a patron here, because this is the kind of fun stuff that we do. And on that note, on behalf of Diane Franklin and all of the listeners here at This Is Revolution, we are.
All they have to do is be careful about criticizing the government.